Hi, everybody. We're going to kick off with a couple slides to give a refresher of what happened back in April. And we thought it would be really good to kind of revisit this. Thank you. Discuss a bit about the way that we cooperated, how this network really came into play in responding to this stuff. And, you know, it's always nice to have a good segue, too, because this is entirely about human factors, what actually went down that we were dealing with that particular day or month, you could say.
Agreed. Yeah, Alex said earlier that humans aren't typically the lowest common denominator to attack, but, you know, I think, you know, and he said people can be powerful borders if they're open to change. And so we'll talk a little bit about that too.
So just a quick review of what happened. This is a couple screenshots from Torrent Freak. This was a publication that came out in early April. There were some screeners that leaked from actually a wide variety of screeners that leaked in early April. Thinking back, I learned about this the day before NAB, and I think many of you were at the CPS NAB session. This was just unfolding for us, or just coming into our view at that time. They hit everybody with basically a social engineering attack. What we found was that there were multiple shows that were leaked, all in the pre-release publicity window. They were ripped from several press screener platforms. So I'm sorry to admit, screeners.com was one of them. I believe you were working on another one at the time.
Yeah, WBTVD screeners and some of our publicity sites, were involved.
I don't want to name all of the suspects, but I know of at least four separate platforms that were hit. They ripped shows. Multiple content owners were affected because some of the content that was being screened was actually transitively licensed, as is really a common thing in our business. And a lot of the content still contained a visible watermark. And there were two things we noticed right away. The one was, there's somebody's name on there. I'm not going to say who it was, but I think you may be able to read it on here. You might remember yourself if you were aware of this event at the time. The other thing was that the pirates had added a watermark. And this is just a screenshot, again, from that already published Torrent Freak article. They had added a watermark that was kind of a promo for a gambling site that supposedly sponsored this leak, which was alarming. Okay, and actually, the MPAA did a really cool write-up on that. I'm not going to talk much about that, but what we want to talk about is the content protection investigation that we got into when we made this discovery. So some initial observations, just as a recap. There was an authorized username on there. She is an actual reporter for New York Magazine, but she was completely unaware and uninvolved in this. They impersonated her. The email address that they used had this domain, nymag.gq, which is not a real domain. But somehow it flew under the radar. I think some of the studios may have caught this, but not everyone caught all of the domains. That was the first fake domain. Well, it's not the first fake domain we ever saw of this type, but it was the first one in this incident and the first of many that we found as we went through the investigation. And what we found was that a variety of imposters had infiltrated these press screener sites. And we, in screeners.com, found some of the imposter accounts dating back to early in 2017. This was in April of 2018, so they were in there for at least a year, being quiet. Who knows what they were doing? Maybe watching the content, maybe preparing for some leak like this. One of the things that makes this really interesting was that this community, the CDSA community, content protection in our industry, was extremely valuable to us in this time frame. We were all talking on the phone immediately. Many of us were at NAB because it's kind of an important conference for our industry, and we were able to meet face-to-face and talk about it. And what quickly came up was a question of, what are we actually allowed to share? what are the barriers to the sharing? Our legal teams were a little careful, which makes total sense. There's privacy laws that come into play, and then there's our own privacy policies. And fortunately, we know that we're allowed to share technical indicators during an investigation. And on the screener side, I was able to contact our outside counsel for privacy, and we looked at the laws, and we looked at our policy, and we said, we can share this stuff. So we started bringing that together really fast. One quick example of an investigation here is we started to find clusters of these users. And this one started from a finding of yours, Christian, which was this fake domain, empireonlinemagazine.com.
Yeah, I think one, if you just take a step back, I think one thing to consider is there's a lot of consolidation going on in the industry right now, right? You've got AT&T buying Time Warner, HBO, Turner, there's consolidation there, CBS. It's happening all over. And when you look at all the sub-properties within those businesses doing the same thing, there's a push to consolidate. And as part of that, we inherited a lot of publicity sites for various properties. And they come with a list of, hey, here's our 6,000 users. And are we going to vet them when it's coming from a very known publicity source that's trusted? Yeah, we're going to do as much as we can, but to vet 6,000 users in a week is not going to happen, especially in a publicity space where a lot of these users are on Yahoo, Hotmail, Gmail accounts, which we just basically forbid right off the bat. But that's a debate that sometimes you lose with publicity people. So there are exceptions, and I'm sure you guys can all relate, that have to be made. I think the other thing to note is the publicity and marketing teams, their core focus is to get publicity, whether good or bad. And they're not really, they don't tend to give as much concern towards the content security as we do. The other thing I'll say is that I think the content security teams are typically outnumbered by the publicity teams, right? I think you could probably relate. You might have one or two, maybe five people on your content security team, but you'll have 30 or 40 publicists. So this was interesting because we did inherit some of these. Our team, and this comes back to the human factor, we train our onboarding team. It really comes back to removing the onus from the publicity team for onboarding and bringing that into the content management and security side. And so there's some due diligence that we had to train our entry-level team on for, you know, researching these users. Are they valid users? And so we were able to flag some of these, like the New York Mag, but when we started this discussion, we started to see this Empire Online Mag. Someone had created a very similar URL domain that was Empire Online Mag magazine or something like that. Mag. It was just a different .com or .tv using valid users. But once this discussion, and I think that is a big part of this, is that this is a very tight community. And thankfully, you know, there should be more people up on this panel, but for other reasons, they can't really speak to that. But they were very helpful. So outside of, you know, a public forum, we're able to talk and really do some comparison because we're all trying to solve the same problem. Yes, we are competitors to an extent, but when it comes to protecting the content, we all have that same goal. And so let's work together. Let's put some sustained thought against this problem. And we were able to, you know, contribute to this little diagram by just adding in new IPs, different usernames, and that's where we went from there.
So we found a bunch of these so-called clusters. This is not the main leak from the article. This was a second group that we found. But this one is particularly interesting because we would not have been able to build this without combining our technical indicators. So, and I know you guys can't actually read what's on there. That's intentional. I don't actually want you guys to see the indicators there. But if I could just show you what these are. The blue spots are email addresses, okay? And they're all different email addresses. Some are on the same domain. Some are on different domains. The yellow dots on here are IP addresses. Many of them in this case were VPNs. These people were popping in and out of multiple VPN providers, including even a, a peer-to-peer VPN that's like a basically every user of the VPN becomes a server node for the VPN. So they were really
which is scary. Hiding like themselves. We were talking about that. That's like the Napster of VPNs. Like, I mean, you could just have some 10-year-old kid unknowingly just being a node for some legitimate threat actor in a different country, and policing that is just very difficult. And having a whitelist or a blacklist of these IPs, it's you're going to be chasing that forever. And I think it goes back to what Dr. Eric was saying, was just, you know, you're never going to hit 100%. What can we do? The part that he didn't go into was Churchill, you know, says, hey, we got to think now that we ran out of money. He never really covered that in his NSA, a 24/7 pen test. I don't know how many of you can afford that, but I know we can't.
It's not in my budget. We pen test as often as we're able, right?
Yeah. But the peer-to-peer VPN is scary.
So basically, part of what we saw was that there were a few of these, in particular, these IP addresses right here, one is a VPN, the other one is a residential IP address. That's either one of these, you know, kind of fringe VPNs, or it's actually that person's business or home that they were on. And that indicator came from Warner. The connection here actually came from, I mean, I think I can say this because you guys can see what the properties were. There was a Showtime property on there, which is CBS. And that came from Brian Ellenberg, who was also extremely instrumental in putting this thing together, that particular line on this graph. So what we were able to do was to quickly start combining these, and they were using different VPNs on different properties. But when we put those things together, this kind of jumped out at us of, these are all the same person or people. And they have very similar shared tactics. So when we started looking at the tactics, what we found was that they're using a couple different brands of VPN. They got this weird P2P VPN, right? And then in addition to that, they're registering these fake domains, like this nymag.gq, et cetera. And all at once, these clusters of users started to fall out. And of course, we immediately going to turn them all off and do activity dumps and start to do a cleanup effort there. But in the process, we learned some things about the particular tactics of these operators.
I think it's important to note, too, that they weren't just buying a domain. And in a lot of cases, they're building a full-on website that looks like it's a legit marketing website or references the legit site. So on first glance or first blush, if someone looks at this site, they're like, oh, yeah, that's the legit site. But they've found that, and maybe it's a testament to all the work that everybody's doing, that on the technology side, the content, whether it's through watermarks or forensic or visible or whatever DRM, is more difficult to hack than socially hacking the onboarding teams and getting a legitimate account. So you can have 2FA. You're a legitimate account. And so they're finding ways to, this technology is putting up a barrier. Let me go around the left flank over here and see if I can enter through there.
So there's a couple other points I want to bring up as we're going through here. Did you, through this event or across this event, did you amplify your onboarding process? Did you?
Yes. So what's interesting is we've always had a two-stage onboarding. So we have content distribution that's all over the globe. So if a user comes in that's in Europe, we do some basic due diligence, and then we send that username to the department in Germany or whatever. And they get the final, they have to approve that. So it's a two-step manual approval. So we all had that. We always had that. But after this, specifically on the publicity side, we had a long meeting with our publicity team, and they wanted nothing to do with this. So they were more than happy to turn over the onboarding to us. And so now we deliver a report to them and says, can you personally vouch for this person? And so we'll do our due diligence. We'll flag accounts that we think are questionable. And they'll just on a weekly basis say yay or nay. And so that was the one change that we did do after this. But we had what we thought were some pretty stringent requirements already, but obviously something got through, and so we changed it a little bit and brought the onboarding and the people, and we also did more training. So anybody who's doing onboarding, we spend a little more time with them in terms of doing some due diligence and thinking as a content protection agent would.
Yeah, we don't, on screeners, we don't actually onboard people. So we were lucky we didn't have to beef up that side of the business. What we found on our end was we had recently upgraded our, basically, essentially put in place a small content protection unit specifically for press screeners. And that was at the demand of some customers and also under the advice of some people in the industry. Part of that came from Al Perry, who's usually here. I don't think he's here today, but he was advising us, among other people, on how to go about doing that. When we got that in place, probably about 6 months before this event, I think it was decent, and it allowed us to do the cleanup, but it was still kind of immature. And what we ended up doing is zeroing in on exactly how these people are operating. When we're talking about like anomalous activity detection, we were able to provide some of that. And then at the same time, our customers came back to us with an ask of, how else can we vet these people? What do we actually look for? Some companies had this in place, right? Some of our other customers, maybe different companies have different practices around this stuff, and they were looking for any advice that anyone has on how to find these particular people and other people in the future. So we really beefed up our content protection monitoring and then started to try to expand that out to produce like a vetting cheat sheet, a vetting process. We also learned that some of our customers and or just contacts in the industry had avoided some of these. They knew a year earlier that these people existed and they had denied them access. So we wanted to ask them, well, what capabilities did you guys have to avoid this in the first place that we could maybe either build those into our software or build them into the process and really get through it?
Yeah, and I think that's probably what comes out of this is what dialogue can there be around the tools that could assist with that? And you know, we can use Splunk and we can go in and analyze it and set up alerts. We have some monitoring that we do just on our back end, and we can track the history very easily. We have a blacklist of domain names that can be updated really quickly. But I think what's exciting is what else is going to come out of this that could be a tool to help that human in that position to be more efficient in researching that account, either onboarding it or flagging that. And there, back to the publicity case, there's going to be those soft alerts where there's some known issues that people look the other way on just because they have to, whether it's a Gmail account or a Yahoo account instead of a GQ.com or a Vogue.com, whatever it is. That happens, but being able to monitor that quickly, I haven't found a tool set that does all that really easily in a dashboard, and that's something that we're really looking at.
So a quick little pitch for my breakout session this afternoon. I'm going to talk about some vetting, and it's not one tool. It's a grab bag of a bunch of stuff that we're using and that some of our friends and neighbors and customers are using. So feel free to drop by and we'll talk about some of the stuff that we're doing, some of the tricks that we've learned. But it's really difficult. I think that we're all in a better place as an industry with respect to this sort of broad distribution of press reviewers and the risk there and kind of being on top of that. But at the same time, we're kind of bracing for what's next. You know, will these same parties or some of these same parties pivot into new TTPs, because they clearly have technical capabilities? Will they, you know, try again from another angle? Will they try to go earlier in the post-production or production process? So we're essentially primed to be vigilant, I would say, right now.
Yeah, I mean, in that earlier talk that Dr. Hasseltine gave, like, using AI and machine learning to defeat content protection measures is really interesting. You know, I've not seen that yet where AI could be used to defeat a forensic watermark. I'm sure someone's working on it. Maybe the team from NextGuard or Content Armor could chime in. But that's an area that I hadn't thought about, and that's probably going to happen. It's you got to have 360 degree security, and that's a challenge for sure.
Any questions from the floor?
Hang on 1 second.
Stand up.
I think you guys, as being a part of this investigation incident for CBS, Showtime, and all of our properties, and we appreciate all you guys did in bringing the community together. And I think it's important to note that, you know, this was not a system hack. It's like the bad guys knocked on the door and we let them in. And we feel there's probably a lot of other, you know, these types of recipients who are still out there lying dormant. And I know that you guys had a concept of some sort of like a verified user, sort of like a Twitter. What are your thoughts on how we could do that so that these people who are verified users, if there's a service disruption, can still get their content and we can act more intelligently on these types of incidents in the future?
Yeah, so we looked into this pretty significantly. For example, we could go to Television Critics Association, set up a little table, you know, get a check mark, do a verified process. I think our main concern is we could do that, but that's a small subset of that 6 to 10,000 users that are the actual sharing audience. So I wish we had tools to vet those people further out, you know, and we haven't identified any. I think as an industry, we should look for that. We should look for how does identity verification work across company lines, across even country lines, and, you know, whatever else. So I don't think we're quite there yet, but I really like the idea, and we're trying to find a good way to make that happen.
Well, one of the interesting things that we didn't talk about was that these threat actors in this Empire Online and New York Mag, they were very brazen to the point where you take away their account, and this happens with a lot of our users. If we are protecting the users or if there's a question, we'll just block the accounts in question until we can do due diligence on them. Usually the users that are legit will get right back to you, and that's what happened is these bad actors got back to us like, how come my account has been taken away? And we would have these chats with them for 45 minutes. We'd talk to them on the phone. I think you were even saying that you actually had a video chat with them for over 40 minutes on camera. They're not afraid to just be like, oh, yeah, I represent this brand. I mean, they are very brazen. And you'd think, to Brian's point or the question over there, that they wouldn't be willing to do that, to show their identity, to really keep playing the game that long. And so I don't know how you do that, especially we also have an FYC screeners app that is anonymous users that just get an ID code. And so the guilds don't want us to know who those users are for obvious reasons. So that's adds another dimension of challenge to this.
Yeah, we did use a video verification with a few of them. We had a video verification process in place for multi-factor reset. And we were able to adapt that. And as part of the story here is that as we were reacting to this and trying to figure out how to respond to these people, we were leaning on what we had, right? So we had this video verification. If you lose your phone or you get a new phone and you do lost your reset code, you can do an MFA reset. We piggybacked on that. And these people were completely brazen. They were writing back in. Some of them refused to get on a call, in which case they're obviously not getting back in. In some cases, we took them out, and our customers went and did some level of vetting and added them back in, and then we could observe their behavior and see that they were still ripping. We kind of had to revisit that again. So I really hope that they're not going to pivot to more technical techniques, because that could get us.
Yeah, that is the interesting question. Like, what is the next phase that they're going to attack? Because vulnerability remediation has been a big topic, just patching older systems. That's from a lot of issues that came up a couple of years ago. And so you've seen, I don't know, I'm sure everybody can relate, but patching systems has become a huge thing at every studio, post-production systems. And, you know, you're speaking of air gaps. We typically have our post systems on a separate network. And so that's always a challenge, keeping them up to date. Then there's, you know, the accounts. They're socially hacking the onboarding team, making websites. What is next? Joe, I'd like to know from NextGuard, what are you seeing? Do you think someone could use AI or machine learning to defeat a forensic watermark? So I don't know if you heard him, but he said it's a cat and mouse game, and that you're just going to be constantly chasing your tail. Whatever they move their chess piece, you have to respond. Yeah, it's interesting. Any other questions?
Questions?
Well, thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Gentlemen, thanks so much. Anatomy of a Leak.